That he was Hari, the personality of Godhead. He saw that the garland of flowers on his chest glorified him with Vedic wisdom and sweet songs and looked very beautiful. He was protected by the Sudarshan wheel for fighting, and even the sun, moon, air, fire, etc. could not have access to him. When Lord Brahma, the maker of the universal destination, thus saw the Lord, he simultaneously glanced over creation. Lord Brahma saw the lake of Lord Vishnu's navel and the lotus flower, as well as the devastating water, the drying air, and the sky. All became visible to him. Lord Brahma, thus being surcharged with the mode of passion, became inclined to create. And after seeing the five causes of creation indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. Important. Even if one is in the material mode of passion, to create something in the world, he has to take shelter of the Supreme for the necessary energy. That is the path of the successful termination of any attempt. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, eighth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Manifestation of Brahma from Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. The Lord Brahma is Atma Ja. Swayambhu. He appears to be self-manifested. The first created living being in the universe. And it is his duty to create the different planets, planetary systems, etc., and to populate the universe. So he is also known as one of the three guna avatars. Specifically, he's in charge of the mode of passion, creation is in the mode of passion. Lord Shiva is in charge of the mode of ignorance and also destruction. Destruction is in the mode of ignorance. And Lord Vishnu, also in this case known as Guna Avatar, is in charge of the mode of goodness or maintenance. So, any experienced manager can tell you it is much easier to create than it is to maintain something. Very often we see all around us, but even in our own institution, in a mode of transcendental passion, devotees often create things or do things, open temples or buy a fleet of sankirtan vans or make preparations to build a big temple or embark on some project, new project, with a lot of enthusiasm, spending money this way and that way. But when the project is actually created, It really takes a lot of effort to maintain it nicely to standard. In Bombay we have, of course, a very big temple. It cost us in 1973-74, it cost us $3 million, and that also in India. So the value of the rupee now is at least 5 times what it used to be. So we can say that the same project today would cost $15 to $20 million. And it's situated on 4 acres of land, right in the middle of one of the wealthiest areas of India. In America, you know, Hollywood is where all the wealthy people stay, movie stars, etc. So in India they have Bollywood. Bombay is Hollywood. They call it Bollywood. They make more movies than anyone else in the world. I don't know about the quality. So we have a project there, and we have our own school, 6-story building of 500 children. And the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust headquarters is there. And there are about 100 devotees living on Hare Krishna land in the ashram, etc. And there's a big auditorium, air conditioned, 400 or 500 seat capacity auditorium, professional auditorium, a restaurant that will seat, you know, 100, 125 people. It's a guest house with air conditioned rooms and very first class facilities. So I remember the effort it took to create it, a big effort. We were opposed by many people at that time. So that made the effort even more difficult. It was very austere. It was actually a great battle. That's another story. Maybe somebody will tell you that story. Maybe we're wrong when you come to Bombay. But now I know that maintaining it is the biggest headache of all. And I can understand that it requires a lot of proper planning. For example, it is common knowledge, at least in America, that if you build a building and you want to maintain it in the same, at the same level of opulence or the same quality as when it was originally opened, you have to be prepared to spend every year about 2 to 3% of the original cost of the building. In other words, say the building cost us $3 million, and say that's worth $15 million now. So 2% of that would be $300,000. So we would have to spend every year $300,000 just on maintenance. built to keep it in proper condition. Now, to raise that kind of money is another kind of headache. We've thought of robbing banks. Not very dignified for Saudi. Anyway, it's a good project. Ron Ross Bihari is there, and he is actually doing everything. So by Krishna's grace, it is being maintained relatively nicely. Generally speaking, in the West, at least in America, if there's a Hare Krishna temple in a particular city, and you find out the road that the Hare Krishna temple is on, you don't know the exact number, but you find out the road that it is on, you can usually easily identify the Hare Krishna temple as the worst maintained building on the whole street. this is unfortunate. But Lord Vishnu, he is, of course, in charge of maintenance of the whole cosmic manifestation, and he is perfect and complete. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Dham Purna Purnamodachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamivavasishate Purnasya Purnamadaya. All emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfect and complete in and of themselves. There's nothing lacking. This description here of the appearance of Lord Brahma is as seen through the transcendental vision of Maitreya Muni. The great devotees of the Lord are perfect mystics also. It is not that they are without mystic perfection. On the path of self-realization, one type of perfection is to attain at least Ashta Siddhi, or eight mystic perfections, including Anima Siddhi, Lagima Siddhi, Prapti Siddhi. One can become lighter than air. One can become smaller than the smallest and enter into anything. One can, the mystic yogi who has prapti siddhi can reach out anywhere and get anything from anywhere in the universe. Prabhupada told one story about one yogi that he knew about in Delhi. This was at least 50, 75 years ago. Who could produce very nice pomegranates from Kabul in the middle of Delhi. The Kabul, Afghanistan, they're famous for their pomegranates. So, Prabhupada tells a story how this yogi could procure just like that. And there are other many other examples. If you go to the Kumbh Mela in India, every year there's a Mela, a spiritual festival, and every 4 years there's a Kumbh Mela, which is a large festival, and every 12 years there's a Maha Kumbh Mela. So we attended two Kumbh Melas, one in 1977, the Srila Prabhupada, and one in 1989. The one in 1989 was the most auspicious configuration of stars and the largest Mela in 144 years, 12 times 12, 144. So, what happens at the Kumbh Mela is there's a very auspicious time for bathing in the Ganges, especially the Allahabad Kumbh Mela. There is a confluence, a coming together of three holy rivers. And to take a bath in that confluence is considered to be very, very auspicious. So the sages, the rishis, the yogis, who are living in the Himalayas, they come down from the Himalayan mountains for that Kumbh Mela, and naturally they attract many pilgrims also, many pilgrims come there. So it's like, Mela means a fair, like you go to a big, a swap meet or something, some kind of festival here. Festival for flowers, people show off their, or dogs, you know, people show off their dogs, whatever. So in India, they don't have dog festivals or anything. They have something a little better. They show off their sadhus. It's really quite something to see. There are hundreds and hundreds of camps all over, and each sadhu has got his followers, and they're showing off their particular type of meditation or whatever it is. It's like a kind of spiritual supermarket. You can go in and choose whatever brand you want. But you really see some interesting things. You definitely see people lying on beds of nails, and lots of people swallowing fire and eating glass and all kinds of wonderful things. The only one I haven't seen yet, which I'd still like to see, is somebody climbing up a rope into the sky. That I've heard about, but I've not seen it yet. But it is evident that by great austerity, one can control material nature. Siddhi means someone has got some ability to do something which appears out of the ordinary for most people. For example, in Indian politics, it was sometimes seen that Indira Gandhi would go to some remote village or village area where there were many, many villages living far from any big city or from so-called civilization in the woods they were living. But nevertheless, there was a substantial block of voters, potential voters. The fact that they were very simple people, still they had a vote. So she would organize a grand meeting of these villagers, thousands and thousands of people. She would have her party members go out and organize, bringing people by bus and this and that to a particular location. And then at the appropriate moment, she would fly in a helicopter. So these people had never seen a helicopter before in their lives. So they thought that she was some kind of goddess descending from the sky. Seriously, simple people, they but they don't know what it is. How does it fly in the sky? What is that from? Maybe they've seen an airplane, but they never seen a helicopter. So she would fly in and just drop right down beside the stage and come up and speak to them. So in this way, for the villagers, it was like some kind of mystic city, mystic power that this woman had. For the driver of the helicopter, for the engineer, they know it's just a machine. It's an old 1920 Russian helicopter. Not even the latest, Spitfire from America or whatever. But in that way, one can develop different siddhis. Prabhupada talked about yogis who could take their morning bath in all the different holy places of India. They would actually take bath in Haridwar, which is at the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. And they would go underwater in Haridwar and come up in Prayag and then go down again and come up in another holy place. So this sounds very mystical, and it is very mystical, but Sadaputta once explained how, you know, Sadaputta Das, the Bhaktivedanta Institute mystic scientist, he explained how we are familiar with three-dimensional space. Things have got length and breadth and depth. So that is three dimensions. Scientists think about and talk about four-dimensional space, although they're not quite sure how to conceive it. But Sadaputta explained, and it's explained in the Vedas also, how there are actually 24, 28, something like that, I forget exactly, dimensions to reality. And he explained how if you draw a grid is, you know, lines crossing one another. So if you draw a grid, say this is a two-dimensional grid. So it's a little hard to explain, but okay, here we go. You draw a grid like this. So this point here is close to this point, to this point, to this point, and to this point, to four different points. Now, if you draw another dimension to this coming off this side, then it becomes close to these points. And you go on increasing the dimensions, ultimately you come to a place where this point is close to every other point on the grid. So those who are able to understand and work within different levels of dimensions of space, they know how to enter in one point and come out at another point. It's a little complicated to think about, but especially it's hard to explain when you don't know what you're saying either, but it sounds good. And Sadhaputta says a lot of things that sound good. So yogis can, because they know, you know, how to enter into the grid here at Hardwar, but every point is close to every other point, so they can come out somewhere else without, you know, a lot of holding their breath and swimming hard and things like that. So this is, if you know the science, then it's not very difficult to understand. So a pure devotee of Krishna has all those different siddhis, either directly or potentially, that he can manifest whatever Krishna wants him to. He is Krishna's servant. But a pure devotee will never manifest siddhis for the purpose of exploiting, cheating, or manipulating others. Sometimes we see that one of the siddhis is to hypnotize or control people. And sometimes yogis do this. A yogi can actually conquer sex desire. The very desire which Pumsas Triya Mipuni Bhava Metat Kayoramito Hridaya Grantim Hridaya Grantim Ahu, not of affection of sex, is it tightens the heart knot. One becomes very attached to material life through the sex attraction. And in order to get free from that attachment, one is recommended to regulate his life. Yukta hara viharasya yukta chestasya kamasu yukta svapna vabodasya yoga bhavati dukaha. In the sixth chapter, which is the chapter about yoga, Ashtanga yoga, how to practice Ashtanga yoga, mystic yoga. So there specifically, it is recommended to regulate your life. All your eating, your sleeping, all your activities. By doing that, you can even make your material life peaceful. Yoga bhavati dukkha. All the pains that you experience in material existence can be easily tolerated when your mind and your body, everything are very nicely regulated. So a yogi, because he's expert in his sadhana and regulation, he can conquer sex desire, but that same sex desire may manifest in the desire for power, for disciples, for followers. So sometimes such yogis may take advantage of different siddhis to influence people. But a pure devotee of Krishna is only interested in serving Krishna. He has no interest in doing anything which is not pleasing. Because he has no interest in disciples. He has no interest in power. Mukti bhukti siddhi kami shokali ashanta. There is no happiness, no peace obtained by aspiring for the fruits of bhukti or sense gratification, mukti, liberation from the material world, or siddhi. Those who desire siddhi, siddhi kami. Because they have material desires, they don't get satisfaction. But Krishna Bhakta, nishkam, he has no personal desire. Sometimes people say that spiritual life means to kill all desire. Make all your desires zero. Many persons will say this. But, first of all, that's impossible. Because no desire means no life. We have naturally have a desire to please Krishna. So, it is not a question of killing desire, but it is a question of purifying our desires. Akama sarva kama va. Even if you have all material desires, if you engage in tibra bhakti, then those desires will be purified. So, those who have material desires, the muktas, the bhuktas, and the siddhikams, they don't attain peace. But the Krishna bhakta, he has no, nishkam means no material desire. Atayava, shanta. He is actually the Atman Rama, the self-satisfied, peaceful person. So, Maitreya Muni, of course, is such an exalted personality. And Vidura also, both of them, practically on the same level. Liberated souls, pure devotees of the Lord. And they are discussing together. Maitreya is a Trikalavya who knows past, present, and future. He can understand. And therefore, he's able to describe. He has a particular siddhi by which he can see the beginning of time, the beginning of the universe. And he's seen Lord Brahma and describing this to Vidura. It's a very beautiful scene. He's describing what Lord Brahma saw. Lord Brahma was able to see Lord Vishnu. Kenne Brahma Vidya Ya Adi Kavaye. Lord Brahma was instructed by Vishnu. He was directed. He was Vishnu's agent. And when you become the agent of the Lord, when you surrender yourself to become the instrument in God's hands, this is the whole crucial point in our devotional service. Nitamatra Bhava Savisachin. Arjuna, just surrender to me, become my instrument, I will work through you, I will give you all knowledge, all facility. You just agree. All you have to do is agree. You don't have to do anything else. You just have to surrender and allow me to drive your chariot. Allow me to guide your life. And Lord Brahma, because he is very surrendered to the Lord, therefore he was given the position as Brahma. And for the purpose of creation, he needed that guidance. Sarvasya chaham vridhi sannivishto matha smritir jnanam upalabdhi. We cannot do anything without the sanction, without the guidance of the Lord. He is anumanta upadrashta. He's the overseer and the permitter in all activities. Not a blade of grass can move without the sanction of the Lord. So how minutely he controls everything, directly and indirectly. He is Parameshwar, the supreme controller, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Therefore, our lack of surrender does not achieve anything. We hold out foolishly. We refuse to surrender to the Lord. So that is called pratikula bhakti. You still serve the Lord. You still follow. You can't avoid. He's the supreme controller. You're just a little pawn. You're just a passenger. You have no control at all. You think you do. Yeyan ye vrvindaksha vimukta maninas. Foolish persons, vayastabhava avishuddha buddhaya. Foolish persons whose intelligence is impure, they think that they're independent of the Lord, that they can achieve happiness or freedom or liberation without surrender to the Lord. But it is not possible. And they fall down. Aruyakshena param padam padam yada adon nadvita vishmarandraya. And fall down into the world thinking that way. So we should just surrender to God. We have everything to gain, nothing to lose. And Lord Brahma, he is endeavoring to create, and he needs the Lord's guidance, and he's looking for that guidance. He hears the sound, ta, pa, Kashwani sound, and he takes it as the Lord's instruction, and he engages in austere penance and austerity. Ta, pa, ta, pa means austerity. So he takes that instruction as meant for him and practices great austerity for 1,000 years, and he becomes empowered to create the whole universe, and he carries out his duty in that way. So, in the same way, we have a mission to fulfill. We don't have the financial resources. We don't have the population base. We're poor materially. There's only a small number of us. And you have to flood the world with love of God. It seems like an impossible dream, but if we surrender to the Lord, if each and every one of us takes it as his individual responsibility to surrender to the Lord, become the Lord's instrument, then mukham karoti vachalam pangum mangai devi yat kripatam aham vande sri guru sinadharanam paramanandamam. Anything can be done. There's nothing that is difficult or impossible for the Lord. A blind man can see, a lame man can walk over mountains, and even the donkeys and asses of this Kali Yuga can become Krishna conscious. They want it, we simply have to become the instruments and take the credit for it. So, I'll stop there. Any questions? Instructions to us, he gave three instructions, and we should follow them very carefully. Can all agree? Can all agree to follow? How many agree to follow Prabhupada's three instructions? You promise? Now you bow before the deities? Okay. Those three instructions were: chant Hare Krishna. Can you read to that one?
Yes.
Okay. Have no worries. Can you all agree? And be happy. So those are instructions. You must do it. Chant Hare Krishna. Have no worries. And be happy. Those were Prabhupada's instructions. So stop being unhappy, stop worrying, just stop it. There's no need for it. No need for anxiety. Chant Hare Krishna, have no worries, and be happy. Very easy. We can do any service for Krishna, frankly. I feel the same now doing this service as a preacher and a teacher as I did when I joined and I cleaned the toilet bowls for Christian. Bathrooms for Krishna, and I enjoyed the same feeling of devotional service. I cooked for Krishna, I was cutting vegetables for Krishna, and I was the head cook in the biggest kitchen in the sky for Krishna. And the same feeling of devotional service. I was a book distributor, distributing hundreds and hundreds of magazines a day. And I was the Sankirtan leader, telling people, Vadan Sankirtan, Vadan Sankirtan, Vadan Sankirtan. Treasure and my But still, it's the same. Any service, you're so lucky to have an opportunity to serve Krishna and Krishna's pure devotee. You have to serve, everybody's serving, but in the material world, people are just serving ignorance. And we have a chance. We're getting something to fill our bellies. Our bodies are living. We've got a place to lie down at night and sleep. We're getting sleep, and Krishna's taking care of us one way or the other. But where we are now, serving in the way we are, we're preparing ourselves to live eternally. Everything's there. Everything's there. Food is there. Place to sleep is there. You want, other facilities are there, family, children, whatever. Facilities are there. The only difference is here, you are making great progress on the path of Tatsukam Satyakam Tokam Atma Buddhi Prasada Dham. Yet Tad Agde Vishamiva. In the beginning, regulating your life, rising early, doing the same activities in devotional service every day, it may be a little austerity for a mind that is used to wandering all over the universe. For a mind that is used to doing anything at any time, day or night, whether it is good for you or bad for you. Totally indiscriminate, unrestricted, licentious. So, it might be like poison in the beginning. It's not actually, but some people may think it's difficult. Agre in the beginning, Yatad Agre Vishamila. But Pariname Mritopama, Amrit. In the end, the peace of mind that you will get, the satisfaction that you will get from serving God, serving Krishna, and in understanding the mysteries of life, the questions that every man has. Who am I? What's my purpose? Where am I going? What is death? These questions are agitating everyone, but they don't ask them because they don't know and they think nobody knows and they're afraid to even investigate, because they'll be frustrated. So the questions are there, but it just creates fear in their minds and adds to all the other miseries that they have to face in life. But you're getting a chance to answer all these questions. Your bodies are being maintained. You have association. You have everything you need for a healthy life. Plus, you're getting a chance to go back to Godhead. service we can do is a royal opportunity. You don't know how lucky you are, boy. Chance. You have to take advantage of the opportunity. Some will, some won't. Some will miss it. I was one devotee in Ljubljana. Her boyfriend in the congregation voted. Tried to chant, but he couldn't get attracted. I don't know his complete story, but now he wants to eat meat, and he's trying to force her to cook for him. And very unfortunate. He had an opportunity, but couldn't take advantage of it. Think that this chance will always be offered to you. You've got a chance now, you better take it, because if you miss it, it could take you millions of lifetimes to come back either to the human form of life, or certainly millions of lifetimes before you get a chance to associate with another pure devotee. Listen to this one. Listen to this one. If you take the devotional service, and then you get distracted by material desires. At death, you may take birth in the heavenly planets. Krishna may, okay, you don't want me yet, you still have a lot of material desires for sense gratification, but you've been a good boy. So, okay. You go to Swargaloka. And life there is, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. And ISKCON is only going to be present here for 10,000 years. So by the time you finish up there and come back down again, Prabhupada's movement will be gone. And you miss the chance. So better be careful, even in devotional service, you should really concentrate. If you want the mercy, Prabhupada is the 32nd in the line from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya in this Kali Yuga, he rarely comes. Lord Chaitanya's appearance is very rare. Even Sadbhuj is very rare. But his manifestation in his Tuan form is Lord Chaitanya's view of experience and his execution of the Sankirtan movement the way he did is very, very rare. And we're so close to him. And Srila Prabhupada was a very special empowered incarnation, Shakti Avesh, avatar, incarnation of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. How he, Prabhupada said, trying to convert Malechas. We're Malechas. We're the lowest of the low. So he said, trying to convert Malechas into pure Brahmanas is like trying to wash coal. Trying
but still.
But somehow or other was able to infect us with a desire for Krishna consciousness. So we should really do any service that we're asked to. Lord Chaitanya's Sikshastakam is very appropriate for all of us. We should become more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others without expecting any respect in return. We should have no desire, not dhanam, not janam, not sundari, not followers, not women, not money. We just want ahoyukti bhakti, just a chance to do any service at all. If we like our service, very nice, but we shouldn't be in anxiety. Now, karma yoga means do what you like and give the fruits to Krishna. Bhakti yoga means whatever Krishna wants you to do. Even if you don't like that service, but if Krishna wants you to do it, you surrender and you do it. Krishna knows your heart. He knows what's best for you. He's the supreme controller, not the temple president, not the GBC. Krishna's the supreme controller. They're his instruments, and as long as they serve him nicely, they will be blessed and benefited. If they're not, you know, if they have some difficulty or problem, Krishna will make arrangements. Your duty is to become gentle, soft, humble, submissive. That's for your good. You benefit. You become ready. You become prepared to meet the Lord. You can't meet the Lord when you're proud, arrogant, puffed up. No. No appointment. No audience. You have to become prepared. Indraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Shri Jaya.
Om Krishna Swami Ki Jaya.